Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Do you want to go to rugby heaven? Let's go back to 1987 with Squidge, with Squidge. Let's go back to 87 with Squidge.
Hello and welcome to the Squidge Rugby World Cup Retrospective, the rugby podcast that covers a World Cup that Earl Curtin can bear to watch, which we'll get on to. I'm joined, as ever, by the one, there's also the one that plays for Leicester Tigers and I play for Nottingham. I'm joined by one of the Willowins.
Yeah, there's also another one who played for Coventry. And there's quite a few people with that name in the world, actually, that I've eventually realised. But yeah, I'm one of them. I am one of them.
You're one of them.
Yeah.
My name is slightly rarer, but there was a BBC Wales drama where Gwenoph Torchwood was married to someone called Robbie Owen.
That's all right.
Okay. Name. So,
Torchwood's a throwback.
Yeah.
Remember I've never seen any programmes on BBC Wales where somebody's married to somebody called Robbie or Squidge or whatever you want to call me, though.
Yeah, that's far rarer. And another name I don't think you see that often. We also joined from Linebreak Rugby, returning to the podcast. We have Sav. How are you doing? Yeah.
I'm good. It's good to be back once again in an England game that it was a struggle to watch. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm so sorry about this. I'm so sorry we happen to have done this twice.
Yeah. No, it was enjoyable in a sense of watching a whistle constantly being blown and two scrums just smashing headfirst into each other. It was quite interesting, but a bit of a mess. Yeah.
So what's your relationship with rugby from this time, with kind of 80s rugby?
Absolutely nothing. I would say that the majority of my knowledge from pre-95 even, anything in the 80s basically comes from highlights of the Barbarians, basically Phil Bennett montages, Gareth Edwards maybe a montage or two of that. Like there's not actual games I think I've seen. This might be one of the first few games all the way through that I've seen. And yeah, it was an eye-opening experience. I'm not really sure how rugby had that many fans, to be honest with you. Like especially if we go back and think about what we've come from and where we are now, like it's light years difference. Like it's crazy. The distance traveled is mad.
Yeah. I mean, so Earl Curtin, who was a pundit on the halftime coverage in this game, and also is a commentator on a number of the games here, I've since found he described the 2019 World Cup as almost unwatchable and incredibly boring.
Really? Wow.
Yep. Because most of the tries come from malls now, so it's just really boring. Game's gone soft. And like, no wonder kids aren't wanting to watch anymore. He said one really interesting thing in that interview, which I do agree with, which is that it used to be a game of evasion, and now it's a game of invasion. Which I think is a nightmare.
That's actually a really good turn of phrase, in fairness.
But everything else he says around that is very like, God, the game's boring now. But then you go back and watch this. As you say, I don't know why people watch this, never mind remember it well.
Yeah.
No, the moments that stood out in my mind are basically a lot of Gary Owens. That seems to be a tactic that people love.
Yeah,
Rob Andrew. I don't understand how he's become lauded. I watched that game and watched Rob Andrew play, and I just didn't like him. Like I watched him, and basically he stood still, caught the ball, and just passed to the 13, and that was or he kicked it straight up in the air. Those are the two tactics.
I looked at this England team and just thought it's full of selfish pricks. Like everybody just wants to do everything themselves. Like, and they didn't even pick Richard Harding in this game, who has done some unforgivable things before. But like Rob Andrew, the very first thing he does in the game, and I know we're jumping miles ahead, but the very first thing he does in the game is catch a ball kind of pirouetting and decides he wants to go for a drop goal for the sake of it, rather than like setting up for a decent position where that would be the right thing. Or at least, if he calls, because It's one of those where if he calls it to his centres, I'm going to go for a drop goal, they would say, no, that's a stupid idea. You're just doing that because you want to do it rather than because it will benefit the team. And I know it's a... We're constantly saying this about every team at some points on this 87 tournament, but it's so true. It's just full of selfish idiots, man.
Yeah. And especially since this England team's point of difference is that their pack were massive bellends and angry.
Dean Richards, by the way, was absolutely ruthless, I thought. I thought he stood out as being quite good. And his offloads were quite strong. I was surprised by the level of offloads. There were a huge number of offloads. The ball would be knocked on a million times, don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
But the attempted offloads and kind of just flinging it back in a ruck and watching the ball just roll around on the floor for a lot of the game was, you don't see that much anymore. Really.
Yeah.
No.
I agree with what you're saying about Dean Richards, because like you look at this whole England pack and they all just don't look very good. But Dean Richards at least like punches people and is intimidating and stuff. Like the stuff that he does very well isn't stuff that would translate to a time with TMOs. So he wouldn't be very good these days. True. But what he's doing there, like he is excellent because he is at least intimidating and he is like at least genuinely threatening in that sense.
He was a big guy. There were a couple of big guys. There was a moment when I think the two fives went head to head, the two locks. And I was just like, yeah, this looks like the old school, what the people who love the old school like. In that single moment, I was like, okay, this is what they wanted. But then nothing happened. And I was like, okay, that was the one moment of the game where suddenly I could see like an old school style vibe. And the rest of the game was basically, they play for 2 seconds, the ref blows his whistle, there was a scrum. And then they would talk about one team having dominance in the scrum. And I was like, I don't really see it. Like the ball kind of goes in, it kind of gets knocked about a bit. And then occasionally the whistle blows again. There wasn't seem to be much continuity at all in the entire game.
Rules were generally made up on the spot by the sounds of it.
Yeah. And lineouts were a mess, despite the fact everyone seemed to want to kick. My favorite part of the game actually was the USA they had some lineout calls. So they'd be like, 4, 7, 6, 5. And then the guy would just launch it and it would go random. I'm not really sure who he was aiming at.
So we cracked the lineout call before. So yeah, for example, he says 4, 7, 6, 5. In that case, he would throw it to the fourth man in the line because it's just the first number that he calls out. Which is really funny.
At one point,
they were really loudly on the ref mic.
Tries to confuse everyone and he says, red, 4, 7, 6, 5. He just put a colour in there, which I think probably froze everyone off.
The England players go, where's red? Yeah. Where's number red? Who's got red on their back?
England had set plays from lineouts. I don't know if we noticed. There were moments when like one of them would jump up and tap it and then Dean Richards would run the other way and catch the ball. And the only way that that works is if Dean Richards has pre-run round the back of that lineout.
Yeah.
So there was some sort of pre-thought move, but yeah.
But since they were such a free-for-all, it was hard to assume you were going to get the ball.
100%. It was just slapped around, wasn't it?
Yeah. I mean, it was, I think, Romania against like Zimbabwe, where they just had like 4 massive men, and Zimbabwe didn't. It was the only time we've seen anything resembling safe ball in this whole tournament.
That's quite funny.
You have no idea.
I might watch that game.
Yeah. that game's a bit of a banger. That game is genuinely that's maybe the one to watch. None of them are the one to watch. But if you
other
have
than the
to,
ones with dogs coming on the field, they're the only ones.
The
that
dogs
are
coming on the field.
I did have written in here at some point in the second half, like, can we have a dog on already? Just because like this game finished 34-6 to England, and it is, I would probably not hesitate to say, the most dull game of the tournament so far.
Really.
I think it's certainly up there. Yeah.
I thought England-Australia was worse.
Oh, England-Australia was bad. Wales-Ireland was like shit as well.
This, but imagine if Michael Leiner's having a meh.
Yeah,
at least here you've got kind of an underdog thing happening on the other side.
Okay,
you've
it's
got
bottom
like
three.
One of the best players in the world having one of the worst games of his career.
It's funny how England have turned up in two of those three really terrible games. And again, like, the USA really played their part in how shit this game was as well. Like, it wasn't all on England. USA really did not help themselves. So, yeah.
There, there were moments when, I mean, Rob Andrew kicked a lot. They all kicked a lot, to be honest. Mm. But I think the fullback and the wingers for the USA were actually all right. Like, they took a lot of high balls.
Yeah.
They actually survived the bombardment. I didn't think the kicking was very effective. And only kind of in the second half, not kicking didn't really stop, but England started scoring not from kicks, if that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
There was even a point when the 13, it wasn't Harrison, it was someone else.
Francis Clough.
Was it Clough?
Yeah, Francis Clough was playing 13 for England, whoever the hell he is.
Exactly. I actually looked up some of the names. Who was the fullback? Webb. He kicked quite well. He kicked quite well off the tee as well. He ended up just not playing for England for a while and just becoming a surgeon.
Like, yeah.
1993, he becomes a surgeon in Bristol or something. Like, he's not even playing rugby anymore.
Didn't you say he sat his exams in New Zealand?
He was sitting some of the exams in New Zealand, yeah.
Okay.
In the hope of becoming a surgeon.
Yeah.
And yeah, eventually just goes like, yeah, this is better than rugby, isn't it?
Yeah. He got dropped for someone else. I had a look on Wikipedia. He got dropped for someone else, and then eventually, he just decided surgery was for him, and now he does keyhole surgery on people. Yeah,
keyhole surgery involves less blood and guts than playing with Dean Richards.
Certainly less blood. Less blood.
Very significantly so. So we're starting on the England team. I mean, it's largely their strongest team, which is a distressing thought. There's a couple of, like, Brian Moore's rested. Graham Dawe comes in for him.
Rory Underwood's rested.
Yeah.
So which Mark Bailey. I think him and, Underwood and Moore not playing is probably the sole reason why this game went to shit so much.
Yeah.
Because those were, I think those have probably been their two best players so far in the tournament. Moore and Underwood.
Mark Bailey's interesting because he is better known as a historian than as a rugby
player. As a rugby player.
So he wrote a book called After the Black Death, Economy, Society and Law in 14th Century England, and is currently a professor at Oxford University.
Wow.
So we had a game refereed by a Cambridge professor, and now we have one playing on the wing for England.
Who I originally thought was running touch in this game, but alas, it was not him. But that's incredible. I mean, if he was running touch on the left touch line, I'm sure that him and Bailey could have had some really interesting philosophical discussions. But
whilst they were setting up the fifth scrum, then they could have just had a little chat.
Yeah, they could have done a little mini PhD while they were there.
Bailey's had 9 books published.
Wow.
Strong. Like, history of economics, history of kind of how society is molded around that, and is a world leading professor in it now. But yeah, in his youth also played a bit of rugby and happened to play for England for 4 years.
Just got onto the England team, you know. His dad was the coach or something, so that's actually unreal that he's become hugely famous but not for international rugby. I mean, you think of Dean Richards, he's carved his whole career from rugby. Rory Underwood's like rugby, like all these people. Brian Moore's carved a career out of rugby. But yeah, someone playing at the same time, same team,
we're not complete opposite direction. And like, he was, you know, at the time, basically best known as he was a Cambridge student and went on to lecture at Oxford. He splits the divide.
Do you think he was taught by our friend whose name I've forgotten?
Oh, possibly, the referee.
Yeah.
Oh, I hope so, who is in the background of educating Rita.
Yes, which I also forgot.
So, I hope so. Yeah, he played for Cambridge at university, got picked up to go and play for Wasps off the back of that, and then made the England team, or was building his career in academics, which has then gone on to become, you know, far more so. He was also, for a while, a member of the RFU committee, because of course he was.
Does that this kind of screams to me that, I mean, this is going to sound terrible, that the amateur era had a better kind of way of people progressing through, because after 35 years old, like, rugby is what you've done professionally and therefore you haven't got anything else. Whereas, I mean, it's Hallam Amos retired and got to be a doctor, isn't he? You know, that he had to make that decision, but it's quite a difficult one. Most people aren't able to do that in the professional era, whereas we're talking about quite a few people that have been able to do it in the amateur era. But
Simon Hammersley, same thing. He's retired to become like a financial consultant or something.
Hammersley has he?
Yeah. He's retiring. Oh, he's got,
he was a great player.
Yeah, he was always a lot of fun because he was like the most bog standard, like 6 out of 10 fullback imaginable. But
the
he was always
skinniest evasive fullback. Yeah,
and
yeah.
He does look like a financial consultant and always has.
But him and Ben Smith.
The thing is, that's it. Yeah, but now he's retired and he's going to actually go into that. He is going to look so much like a fullback you would not believe.
Yeah, he's going to have to embrace his other side. He was the most Newcastle fullback imaginable.
He was great.
A big fan of Simon Hammersley.
Great player. Like he was one of those, like, he's not disappearing for international break. He's not disappearing, like, all of these things. He's not going anywhere, and he's putting in 6 out of 10 performances, as Sam Lana has been posting about. Yeah. He's doing his job.
Incredibly consistent player. And he's also called Simon Hammersley. Simon the Hammer Hammersley. That's a great name. Better name than Jonathan Webb.
That's the Webb, one thing. Yeah. And Chilcott as well. Chilcott, is it? Oh, no, that's Didcot. Damn. It's a different thing altogether. Just a really boring part of the world. Sorry.
Oh. Well, it's funny you should mention Gareth Chilcott, because we do have another guest with us, which is Gareth Chilcott's book.
What?
Which I bought for the sake of this podcast. And I read this morning all of the sections in here on the 1987 Rugby World Cup.
Okay.
Right? Hello.
Give us a rundown.
Let me tell you, there is not a lot on the 1987 Rugby World Cup. So there's sort of three stories he talks about. It's the first tour he ever went on internationally, like first tour outside the UK he ever went on. He was, you know, quite a young player at this point. He was in that other team. They mentioned on commentary at one point that he's really improved his fitness in the last year, despite him going down for three breathers in the first half an hour.
Dr. Jeff Banterfield was constantly coming on and giving me treatment, like, throughout.
So he was, like, down on his knees at one point. And he's like, well, he's really improved his fitness, young lad, which is extraordinary.
He was quoting one of the coaches, wasn't he? One of the coaches was like, he's just doing phenomenally well. Like, I think that coach was just being positive to try and get him to keep playing.
There's one point where Gareth Chilcott did a one-handed dive pass attempt and just stayed down afterwards just because he was knackered.
So there's, at the back of this book, 5 things Gareth Chilcott would change about rugby right now, right?
Okay.
This is published in 1996. Right. It might be 97, it's around then anyway. It's after the 95 World Cup. Number 1, wheeled scrum law. Okay, get rid of. Number 2, sanctions for players earning off the field. So they talk about some players have been banned, but for taking sponsorships and so on, even in the game, just to a professional. So he'd get rid of that. And number 3, he wants equality between rugby-playing countries of the Southern and Northern Hemispheres in all matters. It's very vague, but sure. Number 4, get rid of those grey, dour people who call for players to have a more professional attitude and want to rid our game of its character. True, the nature of rugby today demands to be taken more seriously, but the disappearance of colourful figures we have both on and off the field would vastly diminish the sport, which I don't disagree. All for professional attitudes, but also I don't disagree.
There's often when people say things like that, I think like, oh no, shut up. But when it's Gareth Chilcott, I'm fine with it.
I want more Gareth Chilcotts. I want to be very clear. I want less James Haskells and more Gareth Chilcott.
I don't have a bad word to say about Gareth Chilcott.
No. But number 5, find the person who invented the bleep fitness test, take him to the Bristol docks and have him hung, drawn and quartered.
I'm fine with that as well. That's fine.
I love that specific to what he would change about rugby as well.
It then says, I hope I've ended this book not with a moan, but with some genuine constructive ideas on how to improve the game.
That is constructive, yeah. Take the bleep test and burn him and hang him, yep. Well, I think the person who invented the Bronco as well, I don't even know, it must have come from the Broncos or something, but that person needs to go down to the Bristol docks as well.
Yeah, just line them all up.
This pre-season, like, I'd rather do what we call Fijian touch or something, where you're just running non-stop, but at least there's a ball in your hand. You're doing something with it. Yeah. So, obviously, Chilcott was a ball player. He was a baller. Yeah. So, he definitely wanted more of that. That's what I'm
saying. That is definitely what he's suggesting, yeah.
Yeah.
So, the few mentions of the 87 World Cup, right? One is there's a story in here about how Bath wanted David Campese to sign for them, and they're trying to line him up with a job. But that basically, he was offered another job in Milan to play, and we'll go and play for them. And they were going to pay them $200,000. And Bath were like, oh, I'm sure we can manage that. I'm sure we can manage that over 3 years. We can find him a job like that. And they're like, no, that's for 6 months. And that's the punchline. But really shines light. That was during the 87 World Cup. Really shines light on that, what a sham amateurism the greatest force for good in the world was.
Shamatism, yeah.
Yeah. Like, he was being given enormously highly paid jobs to basically do nothing. To basically,
and that,
like,
was in the 80s.
Yeah.
200, like, I mean, the players today would be happy with that kind of money, especially with the cap and everything that's going on. Wow, they really thought it was going to explode in terms of superstardom, didn't they?
Yeah,
it hasn't quite hit those levels of income, but I think maybe with outside sponsorship, some of the top end players. I mean, Dan Carter at his peak must have been pulling in a reasonable amount.
So Andre Pollard was on $1 million a year at Montpellier, and he's dropped below that now for less. I don't know what he's on now.
Yeah, but. Yeah.
He was the highest paid player in the world.
Here's what, like, what's Emily Scarrett on?
Oh, no, I did know this. Emily Scarrett, but she's only on like 38 million. 38,000. Sorry, 38 million.
I was going to say, only. She's probably on a teacher's salary, isn't she? Yeah.
So most of the England women's team are on like 25 to 30,000. And Emily Scarrett is listed as being the only player on significantly more than that.
Yeah, okay.
So she's somewhere in the sort of like, yeah, 30 to 45 range, I believe.
Yeah, okay. Okay.
They probably get some Adidas. Oh, well, hopefully they get some Adidas sponsorship and things like that. Cause,
yeah.
But that's still, you know, quite a pitiful amount for the best team in the world.
Literally, yeah. Yeah, by some stretch.
Just absolutely dominant. I mean, we can talk about women's rugby. I went to watch Saracens play the other day, and I've never seen it. Like, when I watched the semi-final against Quins, and I just don't think I've seen a team that was just, they were going to win the final. And obviously they did. I can say that in hindsight. But like, that was just a team that was just, I didn't think were beatable. Like, Marley Packer was just unbelievable. Poppy Cleal was like a bit part to the Marley Packer show. Like,
yes.
And when you've got someone who's that good, who is just playing a part, like, that's a team that is very, very good.
Yeah. Me and Robbie discussed this before, but I love the contrast between Marley Packer's post-match interview and Shauna Brown's from the year before. When Shauna Brown did this really, like, inspiring thing about, like, you know, we are strong women, we can play rugby, we're going to grow the sport, blah, blah, blah. And then they asked Marley Packer, like, a similar question, you know, how do you feel? You know, you've just played really well. You've just won the Premiership. What do you think? And then she just kind of goes, yeah, I'm kind of the dog bollocks, to be honest. Like, I think I was amazing. I think the rest of the team were amazing. And yeah, we really deserve this. And I'm glad I got player of the match.
I am that good is basically what she's saying. Yeah, she's phenomenal. Yeah. And it was a pleasure to see that all live, actually. And
were you at the game, Sav?
Yeah.
Right.
I wasn't at the final. I was at the semi-final. I went to Stonex Stadium for the Quins game. That was just on a whim, like the day before or even the morning of. I just woke up and went, oh, it's the semi-final today and I've got nothing to do. So we bought tickets and got on a train and went and watched the game. And it was really, really good. I really enjoyed it. I would mean the atmosphere was good. That part of the stadium was absolutely packed, ram full. And the ice cream queue was quite long. But the only improvement I would have made is there should have been at least two ice cream trucks rather than one.
I think you should run that by Jack Gareth Chilcott and see what he reckons.
Yeah.
He's got I'm sure he would word. Agree. Yeah.
I was at the final at the in Worcester. Yeah. And I mean, I said this on Twitter, but like watching, there's a turnover Marley Packer made just before half time where she breaks off a scrum, runs back round because the extra wing kind of made a decent carry and enters the rug, wins the turnover. And I've never seen something with, like, so close to me. I was right in front of me. I was on the second row back. Yeah. I've never seen something with such inevitability of, like, spotting her in my vision, like, that seeing her running around and being like, oh, she's going to turn this over. The moment she broke off that scrum, like, oh, this is happening. And it was an extraordinary thing to watch. And as you said, like, the atmosphere was amazing. It was, like, I've been to the Premiership final a few years ago. And, like, and I will have been to the one that's happening after we record this, but before it comes out. But like it was genuinely louder at the Premier 15 final than Twickenham is with.
That final we went to the other year was quite dead, wasn't it, atmosphere wise? That was what, Bath against Leicester?
Saracens,
yeah. That was what, 2015 maybe we went to that?
And
it was dead, man. Like, anyway.
No, the finals in Twickenham are okay, but they're just there is a different crowd to the ones you find at the women's game. The women's game seems to be it. Like that you have to be reasonably diehard to be going to those games over the last few years. I think obviously now that they're getting more and more exposure, there's going to be a different crowd, but they're still very passionate and they know everyone's name. There isn't anyone in the crowd that doesn't know who's on the pitch. Whereas in the finals, really in the Premiership finals, they might not necessarily know every single player, you know? So there's a difference in mentality, I think, between the two kind of games at the moment.
Yeah, I like that. I think that's a really interesting distinction and, very accurate and
also,
important.
Again, as I made this point during the Six Nations, but the fact that you have groups of teenage girls going together, you have mothers and daughters, like, walking past a number of mothers and daughters together wearing matching shirts in the way you sometimes do on a men's international. It's a genuinely quite amazing and moving thing to see, the difference in crowd and the difference in... And the fact that it's genuinely growing rugby in a way that's never happened before.
I mean, the thing that hit me was when, I can't remember, there were people sitting next to me and one of the women in the crowd said, oh, I wish they wouldn't kick it so much. And I went, okay, you're filling the stereotype. You're hitting all the right notes. This is a diehard rugby fan sat in the crowd. You know, as soon as I heard that, I was like, yes, we've reached equality now.
Must always be at least one.
You cannot go to a rugby game without somebody saying that. That's the rules.
To quickly journey back to Gareth Chilcott, much as I would probably rather talk about the rugby teams. The incredible thing about this is that most of the chapter on the 87 World Cup, right, is Gareth Chilcott recounting how England stayed in the one hotel for the entirety of their stay in Australia here.
Okay.
They were in just one hotel. Gareth Chilcott was really pissed off about that when he was told just before they flew out, because he liked going to different hotels and seeing different places. And he was rooming with Richard Hill, the scrum half, not that one. The other Richard Hill. And most of the chapter is about how every morning Gareth Chilcott would open the curtains to check the weather. And he said, I don't know why, it was always sunny. and every morning there was a church opposite their room, opposite their window, and the clergy would put up a slogan that they thought was funny about, like, come and visit our church, but it would be like funny and silly and quirky. CSI cafes and stuff,
getting people in,
getting people through the church doors. And every morning as he opened the window, opened the curtains, Richard Hill would ask him, oh, what's the sign this morning? Gareth Chilcott would read it to him and they'd kind of groan at it. And that is what most of the chapter is about.
That's what he's describing.
He doesn't
that was
mention
the biggest
the
part of his
at
life.
All. Yeah, doesn't mention the rugby at all. Doesn't mention one game.
Just as well.
But talks a lot.
He's all about human connections, that man. Exactly. Human connections and real friendship. That's what he remembers about the whole day.
Rugby values, man.
Do you want some samples of the things that were in outside the church?
Yeah, actually, I do. I want to know what they were doing to get bums on pews in Australia back in 1987.
Fight truth decay. Brush up your Bible every day.
Beautiful. Good. Lovely 9 out stuff. Of 10 priests agree.
Come in for a faith lift.
Yeah, okay. I suppose plastic surgery must have been kicking off. Yeah.
To which Richard Hill replied, you sound like Julian Clary.
Wow.
And again, a dated reference. Supermarket sweep, maybe, or something. I'm not sure what Julian Clary did.
He was just sort of there, wasn't he? He was just sort of on TV. He was like, oh, look, it's Julian Clary.
He used to be everywhere.
And now he's not.
But nobody really knew why. Yeah.
Just sort of
not
a guy.
As much. Not as much anymore.
Okay, this is a good one. Mm-hmm. Come see our CH, then asterisk, asterisk, asterisk. No, sorry. Asterisk, asterisk, just two asterisks. Two asterisks.
Two asterisks, okay.
Then CH again. Come to our church. What's missing? You are. Richard Hill groaned and pulled a pillow over his head, reportedly.
Yeah, same.
Correct. Correct response. Yeah.
Sav and I are both doing that right now.
Yeah.
Seven prayerless days make one spiritually weak.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Poor. I mean, this is obviously someone come up. They've sat down. They're bored. They've got a lot of free time. To be fair, you can't pray 24/7. Although maybe that's your job if you're in the church. I'm not really sure.
But it's like, yeah, 23-7. And the 1 hour is going on these, you know. Yeah, God doesn't mind.
A whole hour going on these?
Maybe it's, each week. Half an hour to sleep, half an hour to come up with this.
Okay,
Richard Hill said that last one was not bad.
Okay. Not bad. He enjoyed that
not
one.
Bad.
Okay.
He enjoyed that one.
Shows the scrum half's brain. Okay.
The next one, sing a hymn for him.
Okay. That one hits close to home. Yeah, sure.
That's a good bit of wordplay.
Richard Hill's verdict, nowhere near as good as the last one.
Not as good as the last one.
So have we got like a league table of Richard Hill's favourite ones?
We're coming up. I think there's one more. It's impossible to lose your footing on your knees.
Which just factually accurate. Although you already lost your footing, according to rugby.
I don't know what it is. You know, there are many allegations that have been levelled against the church that could possibly be referring to. Richard Hill then says, enough, I can't take this anymore. Hands over his ears as he rushes to the bathroom. Maybe he just needs the piss.
I think they've still taken this where you still partner with someone. Like, it's a whole thing, isn't it? Like, that's what rugby teams do. You partner. It doesn't matter how rich you are. If you're getting £200,000 for 6 months' work, you'll still be grouping or rooming with someone in your hotel in Australia. It's nice.
Like, Conor Murray's deal with Alwyn Jones was Alwyn takes the captaincy, but he keeps the captain suite.
Okay. Captain,
which is very smart.
Everyone else has a roommate. Yeah. Just good negotiations.
Very, very good. My last thing on the game, because obviously we should talk about the amazing game that we had. Someone did drop the ball over the line. I've written down Gary Rees, but I don't even know if that was a player on the pitch.
So Gary Rees, worth noting for this podcast and this podcast alone, because he is the last England international picked whilst playing for Nottingham.
Okay, big news for Nottingham.
Yep. So yeah, him and Brian Moore, but Brian Moore left Nottingham obviously to go and play for other teams. Gary Rees was just spent his entire career most
faithful.
Of career at Nottingham.
Faithful at Nottingham.
Yeah.
Fair. I mean that's I mean Nottingham, have they got the shirt hung over the wall, do we know?
I hope so. And well, particular note for you, because he was born in Long Eaton.
Was he now?
Born in Long Eaton, spent his entire career at Nottingham RFC, went on to coach them after he retired. 23 caps for England, played in the 87 and 91 World Cups.
There is a genuine chance I might have seen him down the club at some point. Just I wouldn't know. I will. No, but genuinely, I will have to talk to people about this because chances are somebody knows him within the club.
Yeah, I suppose.
Oh, nice. Very cool.
Yeah.
Get him to take a coaching session or something.
Yeah.
Maybe teach him how to do the try-scoring one, because I'm pretty sure it was him that dropped the ball over the line. I'm not 100% sure off the back of one of the mauls.
Yeah, maybe the kids should give him a coaching session. I think that'd be a good idea.
Yeah, just 5 meters diving out.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
I'm sure I'd be very happy to hear about the fact that someone's watched him do that from 1987. Also, I know you sent me the link to this game and it was great to watch. This game didn't actually finish via that.
So this game was uploaded once again by my arch nemesis Gary Lambert, who is on the flank for the USA and uploaded his own games for the US to YouTube in amongst his career as a semi-professional poker player. Because it's a bizarre World Cup.
Wow.
And but he didn't upload the full game, so it just ends. And
I can't even tell you when it ends because there's no minutes on the screen. I'll be honest with you, when I was watching, every time a whistle blew, I just tapped 10 seconds further forward.
Because
it was getting to the point where I was like, I'm not actually going to have to sit through 5 hours of scrums. But so I tapped and I got to a point where it was a scrum called, I double tapped and then it just stopped and said, do you want to watch something else? And I was like, okay, so the game ended. So I went back a 5 seconds and I just realized that mid scrum, this footage just finished.
The world just ended in this game. Just
cameras stopped working. The crowd actually just got up and left.
But you know what? Usually I would kind of be like, oh yeah, well, I should probably go and find the last few minutes of the game. And this one, I did not care.
Yeah.
I was really, really thankful. So,
I think there was three backs moves that actually involved something other than just kind of kicking the ball straight up in the air. And they were nice enough to watch. And maybe the American try was quite good, I think. Mm. The American try was quite a good one. I wasn't sure whether his foot was in touch. I don't know if we can go back there.
He goes into touch twice
in the end of that try. he was like the number five for England, just absolutely gave him a massive push. It wasn't a tackle, just gave him a big push. And I'm pretty sure his right foot just slammed straight on the whitewash. And then he dives over the line.
But, and the referee just gives it because
bias. Yeah, the referee's just like, they're a little bit, they're quite a lot behind. Like, I'm going to give this. No one cares.
It did come from a dummy wall move, which I liked.
Mm.
I mean, they set at the wall and then switched it to the blind side and went that way.
That's true, actually. Because all the England forwards kind of drifted right and then it came back the other way, didn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
From a defensive point of view.
That try is, you know, you're going to say, like, well finished, even though he does go into touch.
Sure,
I guess we'll say well finished.
I like the tiptoeing he does.
Yeah, yeah. Mike Purcell on the wing for the USA, right? Ooh. Who is the answer to the kind of pub quiz question that no one will ever get correct? Which
Most
is
of these players are.
Yeah. Who scored the USA Sevens team's first ever try?
Oh, wow. Okay.
And it was Mike Purcell.
They mentioned that in commentary, not the try, but the fact he played for the Sevens,
Yeah, so he was primarily, well, I mean, he'd been on a American football scholarship at college, took up rugby, and went like, oh, this is so much better, and went into focusing on rugby.
Okay. Wow.
So went on to coach it. He played for the World 15 alongside Kevin Higgins, who wasn't playing in this game, gutsingly. But, oh, no, he was playing.
Yeah,
of course.
But he only gets the ball, like, twice, which is the only time for USA doing anything good, is when he gets the ball. And otherwise, because I realised we didn't talk about the USA team, didn't run through the lineup. But also, why would we?
No.
It's terrible. So, boring.
He had two sons, Brendan and Jamie. Both of them went on to be selected for the all-college all-American team after playing at San Diego State. And Jamie Purcell, his younger son, also was in the wider training squad for the San Diego Breakers in pro rugby. In that ill-fated league that lasted 1 year.
Yeah, that just collapsed,
Yeah.
So he never actually played a game, but he was in the squad alongside some truly extraordinary names. I mean, so there were, you know, there was Zee Nguenya in that squad, Kurt Morath, Phil McKenzie, Ryan Matthias, Mikey Teo, a young Mikey Teo and a young Joe Tafete.
It's actually not the worst squad in the world. It's not just the Legion squad. There's no Marnano in there.
Phil McKenzie became famous for bad things eventually, hasn't he?
Did he?
Or was that a different name? Like, did he end up coaching the Canadian men's team? Or is that a different...
I think he's like skills coach or something with Canada now.
Right.
Oh, okay. But then the Canadian men... Is it the Canadians men's team that are in just complete freefall? I can't remember.
Yeah. They might be in an atrocious state. And Kim Ji-jung is somehow still in charge.
There you go. Yeah. Okay. It's clicking into place why I'm remembering. Is that not necessarily his fault that he's a part of that setup? But yeah,
things have not gone well.
Things have not gone well. Unfortunately.
Scrum off, they had a man called Tom Bliss, who I have no memory of, but apparently played 5 games for Wasps over 3 years.
Never heard of him.
Nope. 1 cap for the USA, 5 games for Wasps over 3 seasons.
I mean, you've done well to get money out of those 3 seasons. Then to be honest, 5 games, that's a return and a half.
Should we start having a look at some of the stuff in the first half of this game?
Get some of it out
the way, because I am still kind of furious about Peter Winterbottom's stupid kick.
So this immediately follows Mike Harrison doing a kick that I think sums up this whole World Cup, which is that he kind of burns his man on the outside because no one's positioned correctly, but it does involve some good skill. And it's like, well, you know, it's all off and there's reason for it, but actually he's done something quite good there. And then he's like 10 metres out from the line and he goes to chip it over the fullback our good friend Ray Nelson. And instead he just hoofs it as high as he can and the kick goes backwards.
Yeah.
He tries to do a chip over the fullback and kicks it backwards and horizontally about 15 meters away.
And his own man catches it. And that's that's the frustrating thing.
His own forward miles away and inside him, like setting up for the next phase if such a thing existed.
There was another kick. I think there was another kick like that. Was it in the second half? Or maybe it's the same kick where the commentator goes, not his best kick. And it was like, no, it's absolutely atrocious.
You can say that again.
Also, at one point in the commentary, they started just talking about American football with someone.
Yeah.
Scott something.
We'll get onto him, I think. But yeah, Peter Winterbottom gets the ball 5 meters out and sees like 3 or 4 men in front of him. And just goes, yeah, I want to kick this now, even though it's definitely not going to work. Goes for it. Mike Harrison looks at him and just goes, what the hell are you doing? And obviously, I think it's a USA forward catches it behind the try line and grounds it. Not even the fullback. And that infuriated me, and I immediately wrote him on the Dick of the Day list. And every time Winterbottom did anything, including scoring tries, I just looked at him and just thought, like, shut up.
Just absolutely, you've absolutely messed up too much. Yeah. I think... whoever came up with the England game plan to kick, for me, is in the running for Dick of the Day. I don't know if it was Rob Andrew. I don't know if it was the coach. I don't know who did it, but it was absolutely appalling. Some shocking decision making.
Spoilers, but the coach, Martin Green, is fired immediately after this tournament, which is just a proud tradition for England coaches, I think.
Yes. Yeah, I think so. Did they fire Dr. Jeff Banterfield, though?
I think he was Australian.
Oh, was he Australian?
They couldn't hire. They couldn't get him in the first place. Maybe they could do what they did with Eddie Jones or with Matt Proudfoot, and just bring him in immediately after the tournament.
Yeah,
just spend all their money on getting him in.
There is, however, a moment where rugby gets completely revolutionised, right? Because, but by Kevin Higgins himself. So there's been a common theme throughout this World Cup where you can automatically score a try by being a fullback and standing sort of 20, 30 metres behind the attacking line, running in from miles away at pace, and you'll automatically break the line. And as long as you either pass it or are fast, you know, you will score. Kevin Higgins revolutionises rugby here, because there's a point about 2 minutes into the game where John Webb does this. He stood miles back from the attacking line and thinks, right, we're going to score here. Starts running, hits the line, receives the pass, and Kevin Higgins tackles him.
Puts him down.
It's changed rugby forever. And John Webb keeps trying to do it. But Kevin Higgins keeps just turning up and going, like, no, I'm going to tackle you, actually. John Webb's just kind of going, you're not allowed to do that. What are you on about? And then checks the law book afterwards and turns out you are allowed to do that.
Yeah. You are allowed to tackle opposition players.
Yeah.
I quite enjoyed the commentary team saying, like, America are well known for their defensive capabilities and things like that. And I was like, what do you mean they're just tackling? Like, because I haven't seen many other games, but obviously as you describe it, I'm like, well, they were just tackling as you would normally
in a
rugby game. That's and it, still like, conceding a lot of points.
It has been quite common so far in this tournament that like teams aren't necessarily committed to tackles all of the time. Sometimes you get players who just can't really be bothered to make tackles in the second half of games.
It really sounds like it would suit me this era of rugby. Like,
I'm in. We'd make a hell of a halfback combination, Sal.
Oh, like, phenomenal.
1987.
You don't even need to run as a 10, as far as I could hit. I mean, Michael Leiner's not necessarily known to be a running 10. Rob Andrews, I don't think I really saw him run with the ball that much in this game, for sure. He was a pivot. You know, it sounds like you could just stand there and pass to your 13 and hope for the best. It's lovely. More of that.
Yeah. As I say, in defense, completely optional. Positioning doesn't matter at all.
Defensive positioning in particular seemed to be a big problem. Like, you hear about closing the door, shutting the door, whatever we're going to call the 13 kind of making a hit on a man. That didn't seem to be a thing. Never saw a 13 kind of that. You're talking about Higgins there making tackles. But even in the England side, no one really seemed to, I don't know, make that hit that you would normally see in a professional game.
Yeah.
It was a moment in the second, deep into the second half, where I knew the USA finished the game with just six points. Yeah. And they had a line out 5 metres out and there was a maul. And I knew they were going to drop it under no pressure because I knew they didn't score again. Yeah. And so the only other result when you're that close to the try line is you drop it under no pressure because there is no defending at this point.
Yeah. Yeah. Essentially. I mean, we've spoken about the lineouts. They were all throwing one handed, right? Mm. I think both teams, but the commentator specified that the Americans were doing it gridiron style. Yes, and I was like, well, what's the England hooker doing if it's not gridiron style? Like, it's the same. Anyway,
there's one point where the hooker throws, like, does an overthrow, which hits the floor and is knocked on. And Gordon Bray describes it as a beauty.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, there's a couple of those. He was like, oh, that's a beautiful spiral. And then he goes, not straight, though. And it's just like, well, it's just like, what?
They're so obsessed with the idea of them doing gridiron stuff. Like, they keep asking the other commentators. And then at one point, when they're saying for a line out, Gordon Bray says, I wonder if we'll see some gridiron passes now.
Yeah.
It's just all he wants to talk about. He's so obsessed with the idea of
hopefully they gridiron it to the other side of the pitch where Gary Hine is stood on the wing. And there's a point where he says, none of the backs have done any gridiron throws yet. It's like, yeah, well, you're not meant to throw the ball forward, are you?
The idea that he's just, you could be watching a different sport, mate. This is why we didn't have many fans, because it's constantly going, I wonder if this could be a different game.
Yeah.
If we could change it mid-game, if they have a chat with the ref. Like, are the Americans allowed to throw?
No one's got any badminton rackets out either.
But England are always kicking the ball, because they love football. So that's
what's true. Nailed that. The commentary team seemed a bit bizarre to me, right? Because on one hand, like, there wasn't much to talk about. Like, they were just like, okay, there's some things happening. And they kept mentioning that the scrums had a certain winner and a loser. And to be honest, I couldn't tell the difference. And then there was a point when they were discussing the gridiron. They literally discussed this guy's, like, dimensions. I know you said we got onto it. Was it Colin Scott, I think?
Yeah. They discussed talk about him now. Yeah.
They discussed his dimensions. Very literally, he gave us, like, how tall he was, how many pounds he was, all of this. And then there's a moment when they say goodbye, when the commentator says, well, our assistant Rachel has given you the yes.
Yes, so I recall this.
I was like, what?
Couldn't believe this. This.
Well, our production assistant, Janet, says you'll do her. But anyway, we wish you all the best with the St. Louis Cardinals. And I'm sure New Zealand viewers were interested to hear of your success. And we'll certainly follow your progress. And thanks for joining us. And we're sorry to see you've been lost to rugby.
Yes, thank you very much, Gordon. My pleasure.
It's the you'll do her. Yeah, that's the way you phrase it. You'll do her? Like, what? What
our production assistant Janet says you'll do her.
Yeah.
It's the way he's talking about, and Richard Hill goes into touch. What are your measurements?
Yeah, yeah.
There's no break between them.
He doesn't know whether he's commentating or interviewing this guy that's coming sat next to him. So, yeah. So Colin Scott, he's an Australian who has recently got an NFL contract, basically.
Yeah.
Has come and sat next to him because, let's face it, Mark Heller's gone for a nap at halftime, isn't enjoying the game. So Mark Heller's gone to sleep. So they've gone and subbed him in for this other guy who plays a different sport and admits at one point that he's forgotten the rules of rugby.
Yeah,
and he's completely winging it.
He was a rugby league guy, anyways, originally.
Oh, was he?
Really? Yeah, he was originally rugby league. So like having him on the union was even more confusing, and then. And then he was talking about the St. Louis Cardinals a lot.
And Gordon Bray says at one point, despite him being in Australia, I know many New Zealanders will be following your progress.
Right? I got so confused because I was looking this guy up. I put Colin Scott New Zealand into YouTube or Google or whatever, and it didn't come up with anything. I was like, okay, so which part of this is wrong? The name or the New Zealand bit?
Cool.
Yeah. And apparently the New Zealand bit.
And he's on the comms for like 15 minutes.
Just have
him as the co-commentator.
That's a long session.
So there's a point where he starts telling this cool story of how he got drafted in the most boring fashion. And then Peter Winterlottom just scores in the background.
Yeah, like the game just continued. It was an interview. It was like an episode of This Is Your Life or something. Like Parkinson had come out. And rugby just happened to be happening or not happening for the majority of the time in the background.
Ooh. There's a point where Gordon Bray asks him what his salary is.
Yeah, yeah. Yes, oh, 100%. Yeah. Because he was talking about a golden rainbow or something, or a pot at the end of the rainbow, yeah.
Yeah, then he segues it by saying, like, Mike Harrison might now find the end of the rainbow when he makes a break.
Yes, yeah, yeah, yeah. And Mike Always Harrison did like make that. A good break at that point. That was a fantastic break. He made a couple of them, but it wasn't like he had to work hard to make those connections.
And he starts saying, like, oh, that's, you know, per season. He's like, okay, so you could be a millionaire in a few years' time.
Yeah,
and he's like, yeah, I planned on sticking around and playing NFL for quite a long time, which, spoilers, he didn't.
No. I looked that up as well. He was like, oh yeah, in my position, you usually last only 2 or 3 years, but I'm planning on going longer. And then I looked it up, and I think he lasted maybe 1 year, and then he moved on to do some wrestling in the WWE.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, he ended up moving into a wrestling contract.
I mean, that's pretty cool. I imagine.
Well, with his dimensions, you know he's able to do it.
Very true. His dimensions, which he knows inside out. I imagine when we get onto the 1991 World Cup, that Gordon Bray's going to get him on comms again and ask him all about wrestling.
Yeah, well, we can only hope and dream that during that game that he gets brought back.
Yeah.
Because it did bring also a bit of colour commentary.
Yeah, and also explains what happened with the production assistant, Janet.
Oh, I mean, we can't possibly hear that.
I was shocked when that got, I didn't understand why they felt they would. A game of rugby was happening, there was commentary that was already a little bit left field, and then he just felt the need to bring up the fact that Janet was a big fan of this guy. I mean, Janet shot her shot, perhaps. I don't know. All was proffered. Yeah. One of them's not that great.
Can we just double check if he's now married to a woman called Janet?
We quickly look up Will. I think it was Will Scott or Colin Scott.
Colin Scott.
Yeah.
Scott's plural.
Oh, with an S. It was two of them.
Yeah.
He was that big. I haven't really got much else to say on the game other than I suffered it. I survived.
So, want to mention on Colin Scott, sorry. He is, you can book him as a celebrity speaker on the website. List him as an inspiring person and an Aussie hero, and describes him as having an outstanding NFL career, which lasted one season.
Yeah. He played seven games, I think, in one season. Yeah.
That was it.
But that's more games than I've played for them. So
yeah, that's true. That's true.
And more than Christian Wade plays, so
that's true. Actually, more than Christian Wade. I wonder if he got as much money as Christian Wade. Probably not.
I'll tell you what, can I give you a quote?
Go for it.
Right. Colin creates a real affinity with his audience, both men and women alike. When Colin speaks, he really gets his audience thinking about what they can achieve and the importance of goal setting and vision. Yeah, he shows convincingly that setting direction, aligning constituents, and motivation are key to successful leadership. Colin's sense of humour, strong presence, and air of confidence make him stand out from the pack. Right? Do you want to know who that quote's by?
Go on.
Tony Stoker, who is the executive director of Kellogg's.
He's being sold by the cereal man.
Tony the Tiger's best friend and boss
is on first name terms with Colin Scott.
I mean, that was left field. I didn't expect
that was left field. No. I thought you were going to say it was Joe Clarkson or something. I don't know. Somebody involved in the
I thought it was going to be Brian Moore. I thought it was going to be someone from the rugby
Gareth
world.
Gareth Chilcott. Just,
I mean, if Chilcott had said that, I would have just been like, yes.
I will
buy him as an after-dinner speaker. But Chilcott doesn't put his name to something unless it's gold standard.
Very true. But absolutely now it's the Kellogg's man. You're suddenly disagreeing with it.
Oh, absolutely. I don't believe it for a second. He's just trying to flog me some Cheerios. I don't, you know. I don't even know if Cheerios and Kellogg's are the same brand. Could be.
So the one other thing,
if they're not, he's doing a bad idea.
He's not nailed it. Yeah.
Please buy our rivals. Yeah. Please buy some Weetabix.
Maybe it's some reverse psychology. I don't know.
I mean that next
because actually that is true. Given that he is now your arch rival, if he tries to flog you Cheerios, you're more likely to buy Kellogg's. It's very smart reverse psychology.
Wow, he's in the game there. Absolutely. I don't know. Colin Scott ever work as an advertisement for Kellogg's? Maybe he did an American ad or something.
Maybe he grew up to be Tony the Tiger.
Situation is the head of Kellogg's needs to be motivated by a former NFL rugby league player.
Look, they can get down as well whilst rolling around on their billions of pounds, and they need a pick-me-up from an ex-NFL professional wrestler.
Yeah, you know? Sometimes you're really struggling to sell ricicles and you just need to hear from Tony Scott's his measurements.
And that's how the strawberry-flavoured Cocoa Pops come out, because you just get inspired. I saw those the other day in the shop and I just thought to myself, they can't taste nice.
I'm sorry.
If they tasted good, someone would have been selling them before.
There's strawberry Cocoa Pops now.
Strawberry flavored Cocoa Pops.
I do not like the sound of that.
Yeah. I need to take a picture maybe and post it. But I'm pretty sure it was I mean, if they weren't strawberry flavored, they were certainly strawberry colored. They were pinky red, like a raspberry style. I didn't want to buy them. Put them that way.
No,
I was.
I'm going to avoid them. This podcast is not sponsored by strawberry flavored cocoa pops.
A great reverse psychology there. Goodness, Kellogg's has spent a lot of money on this podcast, haven't they? This is number one advert. Apparently.
Robbie, you should try that for Squarespace at some point in future.
It's a great idea. It's a great idea. Don't use Squarespace.
Don't use Squarespace.
Would that work?
They'd bring in too much. You'd be too busy or something.
That's true.
I highly doubt they.
Like, they wouldn't sign off on me using Jonathan Sexton names in an advert.
Have to put to them what you might want to say, and then they just.
I have to send them the segment for before each video is allowed to go up.
And then they edit out like all the funny bits and then just say, just repeat Squarespace 10 times. And that's all we want. Yeah.
Pretty much. Yeah. They've got more and more lenient as I've gone on. But in the early days, from like the third time I tried to do something with them, they didn't like the idea of Jonathan Sexton being used. And this was on a Friday afternoon, I think. And the team was due to play again on a Saturday. So I had to really quick, and I was waiting for a train. So on my way walking back from the train station, I had to literally on my phone write whilst walking a new Squarespace segment, get in, record it, and get it off to them as soon as possible, so the thing could be up before the team played again on a Saturday. Jeez. Such is the life of a
creator,
rugby
content creator,
a YouTube person.
Well, I can see. I mean, you might not be able to see the video. I don't know if video goes live. It probably doesn't. But the amount of notes that I'm seeing on the wall and scrawlings are just Squidges or Robbie, insane amount. Like,
I'm
seeing some notes. I mean, you don't need to tell us what any of them are, but they look intense.
You can see this note is here. Says George Ford Good in all caps.
Oh yeah.
Okay, that one's a good one.
Like a very high proportion of what we do in the office is just talk about George Ford. Not joking. It happens a lot, but
it just says George Ford good. Owen Farrell question mark. We'll find out. depends on his tackling of the day.
Sure.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
So before we go back to the game, I thought that I would lift spirits by doing something completely different but somewhat related. So this is the last game of the USA in this Rugby World Cup.
Oh, heartbreaking and stuff. Okay.
It is. And look, we'll have our leaving party for them later on. But before that, I thought that we could, for last day of term vibes, we could do a little quiz between the two of you.
Oh, God.
I'm about to list you 20 names, right? I want you to tell me whether it is a former USA rugby player or an American rapper. The real name. Oddly,
my American rapper knowledge is going to help more.
Okay. Yeah. Like, so we'll put it to you. And what we'll say is you can say rapper or rugby player, right?
Okay.
And I'll score it between the two of you. But you can go double or nothing by either saying what position the person played, or saying what rapper you think they are.
I am going to be destroyed.
But
I don't think so. I don't think you are.
So it's your choice whether you do that or whether you just say rapper or rugby player, okay? Are we ready?
Okay. I'm ready.
So
ready.
The first one is Jay Wilkerson. So
rapper.
Say rapper.
I'm going rugby player. I'm going for the differential here. I'm going rugby player.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sav, you are correct. 1 point to you. He's a flanker who made his debut in 1991.
Okay. 1991.
Johnny Wilkinson prequel.
Yes, yeah. The Johnny Wilkinson.
Like
Jay Wilkinson.
Jay Wilkinson.
Number two, okay. Jeff Williams.
Rapper.
Jeff Williams.
I mean, both. Both. I bet there's both.
You reckon there's... It's quite... It does seem like quite a common name.
Wait, Jeff is he Williams? Geoff or Jet?
Jeff with a J. Yeah,
Jeff
yeah.
with a J.
Jeff with a J. Could
Jeff with a J,
rugby.
I'm going rugby player.
Really? I'm going rugby. Rapper. I'm going rapper. Yeah. Jeff
Williams is the real name of Young Thug.
Young Thug.
So wow. That's 2 points to you, Sav.
Unbelievable.
Hey, can you just set my first answer?
Nope.
Oh, he's
number three, Jonathan Kirk.
Kirk is not a rapping surname, is it? Like, that's... I've got to go rugby player. Kirk? It doesn't sound like you've come from a background that would end up in rapping.
Robbie?
No. I'm going rapper.
Jonathan Kirk is DaBaby. So, Robbie, you get a point.
Wow. Yes.
That's DaBaby.
Who's DaBaby?
You have to be known as DaBaby if you've got a surname Kirk, because it just doesn't fit. Yeah.
And just, nobody's gone double or nothing yet, but you never have to. You never have to. Number four.
Jesus, okay.
You know,
number four, Calvin Whiting.
Calvin Whiting is a rapper, I'm pretty sure. That's a familiar name. I've heard that
before. He's selling me on the rapper. I'm going to go rapper. I'm going to rapper.
He made his debut at centre for the USA in 2017.
No! That's where I recognise the name.
Literally 5 years ago. Number five, Chester Allen.
Chester.
Yes.
The word and name Chester Allen. I mean, it seems like he'd be a rower more than a rugby player, but I suppose they might have a crossover. I'm going rugby player.
Although, yeah, rugby player.
You're both correct. Yeah, his nice. Centre made his debut in 1912. So you both get a point for that.
Wow, yep. You've really gone back in the archives for this.
Yeah, yeah. Number six, Pete Jovian.
I didn't think America was civilised back then.
rapper.
Pete Jovian. Jove. I'm going rugby player.
So it is a scrambled name of Megan Thee Stallion. So,
what?
Rapper.
Okay, right.
So her surname is Pete.
Oh.
So number seven.
I'm confused.
Belcalis Cephas.
Belcalis Cephas sounds like a rapper, to be honest with you, but...
So...
Could be left field.
Because of that, I'm going rugby player.
It sounds too left field to be. I'm going rapper. Let's go the differential. Yeah, why not?
That's Cardi B.
It's Cardi B. Of course. Obviously, that's yeah. Who doesn't?
Yeah,
know Cardi
and Cardi B,
B
has four caps at fullback.
Courtney Mackay. Yeah.
She was in no. She was in the B team, so she didn't actually win caps.
Courtney Mackay is a rugby double or nothing. Okay, that is a rugby playing second row.
Oh, Robbie, you're going to... Okay. So, Courtney Mackay... No, I'm going centre. I'm saying Courtney Mackay is a real-life centre.
Okay. Courtney Mackay plays second row for the USA. Well done, Sav.
Look at that knowledge.
First
Look
cap in 2008. Number Courtney nine.
Yeah.
Number nine, John Muldoon.
Because there's the John Muldoon... But you said only in... USA internationals.
Yeah, not the former bearded Connaught captain. John Muldoon.
Like was another John Muldoon.
I'm going rugby player.
There is a John Muldoon who was either a rapper or...
There was. There was a second John Muldoon, wasn't there?
Was it rapper? Like, okay. Well, I've gone rugby
player. No.
Now, can I make a... So...
Okay.
Was the other John Muldoon, and I don't know if this counts as double or nothing because I don't know the position, were they part of the one of the two USA teams that won a gold medal at the Olympics?
I'm going to give you 2 points for that, Robbie.
Oh, unbelievable. Because I suppose the sevens wouldn't have a position necessarily.
Yeah.
No.
The knowledge of when... Oh, back when it existed.
Back in like 1920s, like 1920 or 1924.
Yeah, it was 1920. Yeah, 1920 he made his debut.
Unbelievable.
Amala Diamini.
I mean, that... rugby player.
Amala Diamini.
Rapper.
Doja Cat, yes.
Yeah, that rang a bell in my head, I think, yeah.
Jermaine Cole.
Rapper.
J. Cole.
Correct.
Yeah.
But you both get a point. Sav, you get two. Kirk Cassigan.
Rapper.
Another Kirk.
Yep. Big, Kirk's like, the first name
is Star. What is this? Star Trek? Bloody Kirk heavy.
I'm going rapper.
Who okay, knows? Robbie?
I said rapper, yeah.
Both wrong. Played hooker.
okay.
Taylor Mokate.
Rugby player.
I always get sort of South Sea Island surnames and I assume they're rugby player. Yeah. No matter what.
Yeah, there's a flanker made his debut in 2014. Okay. So you're both correct. So there are the six left. Okay. So Dominique Jones.
Dominique?
Rapper.
Ooh, that's a rapper. Yeah, that's a rapper.
Yeah, that's Lil Baby.
Lil Baby. This
How
time,
many
not baby that baby.
Based rappers are
a lot of babies.
Too many.
Babies
way too many. Jason Hunter.
Rapper.
Rugby player. Rugby player.
That's Inspector Deck. So, Robbie, that's a point to you.
Wow. Okay.
Antoine Patton.
Antoine Patton. Rapper.
Rugby player.
That is Big Boy.
Big Boy. That when the babies grow up.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's the opposite of little baby.
Big Boy.
So, with a couple left, the score is currently Sav 17, Robbie 14. So, it's all to play for.
Oh, okay. Hold on. If I get both double or nothings.
There's four left. There's four left.
So you can get all four.
So,
yeah.
Jesse Coulson.
Jesse Coulson, rapper.
Rapper, yeah.
Scrum off. Andre Benjamin.
Andre Benjamin's 5,000.
Oh.
Andre.
3,000.
Yes.
I'll give you that. It's Andre 3,000, yes.
Oh, nice.
And Sav, you said rapper, didn't you? So,
yeah,
I'll give you that. So, with 2 points in it, there's two left.
Okay.
Jacob Wasdorp.
I'm going rugby player. I haven't got a position really, unfortunately. Okay. Just a rugby player.
Rugby?
I'll go rapper. Split it.
He's a prop.
That was my gut, but I felt tactically, since I've got no idea.
The final one is Toby Lestrange.
Toby Lestrange was a fly half and centre.
Yep. And he's also Lil Pump.
what? Things have gone left field.
No, so Sav, you win by 1 point. Congratulations. You are the winner of the inaugural rugby player or rapper quiz on the Squid Rugby World Cup retrospective.
I can't wait to do that again.
Yeah, I mean, this, it just needs graphics and maybe like a funny theme song.
Yeah.
And then it would just be, I think that could be daytime entertainment up there with Pointless. Yeah.
We can get sponsorship from Kellogg's. Get us off the ground.
It's true. It's true.
Colin Scott to present.
Yeah.
Yeah. If he's free. Obviously, he's very busy with his after dinner speaking.
Yeah. He's got a lot going on, that boy.
How do you feel being the winner, Sav? How does it feel?
You know what? I'd like to thank my friends and family and all of the people in the line break offices who work tirelessly to make sure that we're posting 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Yeah, it's kind of bizarre being on a rugby content creators podcast when I don't think that we've created rugby content for about 4 or 5 years. but we sure post about rugby. A lot.
Lots of outstanding shit shithousery and just work on Twitter generally.
And
excellent
just sometimes, agree. Sometimes my phone, when CC posts about something, it starts to vibrate a lot with the notifications. And I do think Twitter does something to try and stop me getting notifications. And you know what? But I need that dopamine buzz to know that CC's off on one.
And, that is, of course, Adam, who we had in the podcast recently.
Yes. That is Mr. Jenkins. He's phenomenal when it comes to. And also, sometimes I'm like messaging him on our group chat, on the Discord, or things like that. And I'm just like, this is my opinion on things, but I don't really want to get into a war about it. And he like repackages it in a way which is funny, and then just puts it out there. And it's just like, yeah, he's nailing that job.
I mean, booking you for this podcast was a mission in itself, because I had to specify that I wanted you when messaging the Line Break account.
Yes.
Yeah.
Hello. It was something like, hello, Sav. And at that point, I didn't actually get that notification, because I think one of the others must have read it.
Oh, wow.
But for some reason, I am checking the DMs quite regularly. So
there we go.
I didn't realize there was an alternate part of the DMs for a long period of time. So we have loads of messages from loads of different people that have like asked to write for us on the website. We've just apparently ignored them, including quite a few people that have gone on to become quite reasonably well known, I think. That Ben, is it Ben Nurse and some and Reese on Rugby, some of these people, that they're getting more backing. So it is nice to see that despite us apparently slighting them, they're doing well. It is good to see that.
That is good to see. That is good to see. Should we wrap up the game?
Yes.
Sure, yeah. Mike Harrison scores a try of lovely touch by Jamie Salmon.
Yeah.
One point in the first half, Jamie Salmon does a kick, and the commentator said Salmon loves that left foot, which is just as well because Evolution worked very hard to get it for him.
Yeah, that's true.
And yeah, lovely touch by Jamie Salmon to put Harrison in on our support line. And then we have a couple of shite tries that are just terrible that we haven't mentioned.
There's the other Peter Winterbottom one from the first half, actually, where there's the line out and he just kind of like rips it off a friend and falls over, and who cares?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Oh, but it's such a problem that now the game, there's so many mall tries.
Yeah, right?
Okay.
There's a point where the USA set up a wall move and Mark Saunders just kicks it in the air instead of running with it, which doesn't make sense at all.
Yeah, they just... The kicking, again, drove me mad. I want 5 minutes now to discuss the fact that I really lost a lot of respect for Rob Andrew during this game. Like, I didn't know that this would happen going into the game, but I've heard, you know, Rob Andrew's a good 10, all of this. Like, and then I watched it and I really just, I died a bit inside. And I think it's because I compared him a bit to Wilkinson, because he was kind of held up as being this level and then he just wasn't. And it hurt. And I mean, that moment when you're describing there where they just, the kick, they decided to just kick it randomly. I think that's because that's what Rob Andrew was doing. So they thought they would do it as well. And it wasn't good. It wasn't good at all.
No, Rob Andrew was quite frustrating to watch at points in this game.
This is 2 years into his career as well. Like, this isn't his first few caps. And obviously he goes on to play for quite a long time.
And like, he played quite well in the previous game where he came off the bench.
Yeah. Okay.
He played really well.
Plays for England for another 10 years after this. But I assume he probably gets better. But
you'd hope.
We're still far enough into his career and he is first choice that we should be seeing something.
It is one of those things that often watching his games back, I forget that players can have one bad game. Yeah. I'm like really judgmental watching these players back from 87. But
maybe it was a bad game, but it was hard.
But it was a bad game. Yeah.
It was.
I would also like to point you in the direction of Earl Curtin's halftime analysis of Dean Richards.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Jeff Richards for England. He's really strong. He looks like a rural-down New Zealander from out of the back of the King Country, really, rather than a man from such a sophisticated country in Europe.
Oh, God. There's problematic everything in that moment. Yeah. it's interesting that he decided to go down that route to describe him. He was basically kind of describing a half-bear man. And Dean Richards was a brutal character at the back of that.
Of course.
Yeah.
But it's just, I love the kind of the racial stereotyping that he goes down.
On two different levels. He has classism and weird, also oddly positive xenophobia.
Yeah. It's bizarre. And it's just like, basically always says, oh, he's both big and he's English. That's so strange.
Like, it's strange that someone can grow to be that tall.
Yeah.
I've never seen someone with more bent copper energy than Dean Richards.
Honestly, he's a force to be reckoned with on the rugby pitch. You can see that. And he's obviously done well out of rugby. He's done well out of rugby, for sure.
Yeah.
I suppose so. Yeah, he never went into philosophy, did he? So he had no other choice. Do we have anything else we want to cover in the game?
We've sort of covered the game, haven't we?
Yeah, I would like to encourage us just halfway through a conversation, the conversation to just stop, much like the footage of this game. Just like, no exit. I just want it to, and we're done.
Yeah, sure. We'll definitely do that at the end of the episode. I'll make sure when I edit it, I cut Robbie off halfway through his last sentence.
So, I suppose this leads us on to a very quick, if we have nothing more to say on the
game itself,
then the only thing that remains to be done is
frantically loading
to have a very quick going away party for the USA.
Yeah.
Woo!
So, and
I mean, we did look at the USA team at the start, but they do have in the second row Bob Corsi, who I'm pretty sure is Bob Casey, the former London Irish lot.
Yeah, I thought that. Yeah.
I mean, no, so very quick. Ray Nelson obviously stands out for being a fullback with a bullet. Yeah. And he catches
Ray Nelson was fun. I enjoyed Ray Nelson. I've enjoyed his company in this World Cup. I think that the best player by a long way was Kevin Higgins throughout this tournament.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, by such a distance.
Like, he looked really, really good until this game, where until he didn't really get much chance to do much. Yeah. But he did revolutionise rugby, so it was fine. Yeah, that's more or less like everyone I have to kind of point out in this USA team. They weren't terrible, but...
So I didn't know this until today, but Kevin Higgins died last year, really quite suddenly.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Higgy, as he was known. This was sort of the USA communications director. Said, he was... Talked about what a great player he was, but also what an inspiring leader and true friend he was to everyone that knew him.
That's very nice.
He would always lighten the moment with his quick wit. His laugh and ability to make people laugh will be sorely missed.
Oh, that's very nice.
Yeah, so on top of everything we say about him as an excellent player who...
Yeah, he was very, very good.
The time. Yeah, by definitely. All accounts, a wonderful guy as well.
Yeah. No, that's excellent. Yeah. That's, Kevin Higgins is definitely the standout for the USA.
Yeah.
I mean, I'd imagine that you've got a certain dick of the tournament.
So... Obviously, if we're picking Dick of the Tournament, I mean, Joe Clarkson kicks every single ball he catches, which...
Oh, Christ, yeah.
And not every ball is passed to everyone he catches. But, I mean, if we're picking a Dick of the Tournament for them, obviously Gary Lambert is my arch rival.
Yeah.
But they do have rape defender and massive cunt George Hook as their coach.
So, oh, wow, okay.
So, yeah, you know.
That explains itself. Okay.
Yeah.
Sav, anything you want to say in the USA before we wrap this party up?
I didn't know them well enough.
No.
Unfortunately. I mean, they seemed very gridiron-esque, and I really enjoyed that aspect of their defensive nature. Yeah. I mean, you're right. They made some defensive tackles that apparently weren't common throughout the rest of the tournament. So
it's
true. I can only commend them for that.
Yeah, that's very true. Okay, should we do Man of the Match and Dick of the Day?
Yeah.
Sure. Okay, sure. So sorry to Miley. Thank you for your contributions. I also want to read a quick George Hook quote that I've just come across to back up my claim that he was the tournament. The day after the earthquake in Haiti, he said, "It's a godforsaken place. God has literally forsaken it. They got what was coming to them."
Oh,
Jesus
Christ.
Well, what an absolute piece of shit.
Yep.
So, amongst the appearing on the punditry to defend a rape trap, like, it's just... lots and lots of just general cuntish behaviour. So,
well, that puts my Peter Winterbottom Dick of the Day shout in context.
So, so that's my Dick of the Tournament for the USA. But for this one particular game, should we start on Man of the Match?
Player of the Match.
It's very difficult. Go on, Sav.
Yeah. I mean, I've written three names. I've written Harrison, Webb, or Chilcott. I think Webb, just because he kicks stuff. And the kicks were decent off the tee. Harrison, because he made some good runs and scored a nice try.
Yeah.
Probably scored the best try of the day, other than the American one, which we're not sure if he was in touch or not. And Chilcott, just because, you know, he, when he wanted a break, he took a break. And respect to him. If you need to take a knee, you take a knee. And no one's going to tell you otherwise.
Yeah, especially not the church.
Not the church is not, they're just trying to get you to take a seat. Yeah, aren't they? They do want that to happen. I'm going to go Harrison probably on overall.
Okay.
Yeah, just a couple of good runs and a decent try. Yeah.
Yeah, entirely justified.
Mike Harrison's very much in contention for me as well. I think he's very good. I really enjoyed him this tournament.
Was he the captain on the day?
Yeah, he's captain.
He was captain on the day.
Apparently, three players were asked to be England captain. They all said no, and so he was the fourth choice.
Okay,
he was captain for this World Cup.
That's obviously always how captaincy is handed about. You open up to the room and the guy puts his hand up. He's usually the captain.
It just so happened for
the Lions that Alan Wynne-Jones was just really tall. So they all saw his hand. That's how it works, yeah.
They're just really lucky Adam Beard was just very shy that day.
Yeah. He wasn't feeling it. I don't have a... go on. Who else have we got?
Oh, yeah. So, I mean, the other guy, I think, in contention, I thought Wade Dooley was a name I heard quite a lot in commentary when things that looked vaguely positive were happening. But I think... And also, he scores a try after the game cuts out.
Okay. That would have been nice to see, I suppose.
But...
that's funny.
But we have no way of knowing if that actually happened.
No,
so therefore, I don't think that can contribute towards him getting Man of the Match in this podcast. But it
in our universe,
it doesn't happen. Yeah. That game ends midway through.
Yeah.
It's never a final whistle. This game's still going on, but also
it was called
happened.
Early due to a power cut.
Yeah. So, seeing as I have to rule out Wade Dooley's try, Mike Harrison did score. So I'm gonna give my man the match to Mike Harrison as well.
Perfect. We're nailing
Fair
this.
Enough. That must put him in contention for player of the tournament now.
That put him level with Fabio the dog.
Oh man.
And is anyone else? Fabio the dog and Mike Harrison are joint on player of the tournament so far.
Amazing.
So, man of the match is quite difficult to pick because everyone was terrible. So, one person I'd written down was Chilcott. I think he was good. Yeah. I enjoy him a lot as well. Another person was Janet from production. I had her written down. I think she was excellent.
Yeah.
But what
she
I had
is a good entertainment.
What I have written at the end of my notes is stream finishes early. Thank fuck, Gary Lambert, man of the match.
Yeah, okay. Well played, Gary Lambert. Congratulations. Yeah, beautifully done.
So, yeah, he's my man of the match for the fact that he didn't make me watch, or he's responsible for the fact I didn't have to watch the rest of the game.
Perfection.
And should we do Dick of the Day?
Oh, yeah, Dick of the Day. Christ.
Because I was considering Gary Lambert as Dick of the Day for the stream finishing early.
Oh, well, both ends.
Yeah, but now you put it like that, actually.
He saved us.
I've got to give him Dick of the Day for different reasons. No, at one point, he's in the backfield and does a kick. We see both Dean Richards and Gary Lambert drop into the backfield at some point, which is interesting as a, you know, back row dropping the back row, which is something I figured came in about 10, 15 years ago, but apparently, you know, there were shades of back then. Yeah. He does a kick, kicks it immediately to John Webb, who counterattacks and makes a break. But hey, there we go. Those sort of things happen. I'm talking now because I have no idea who my Dick of the Day is.
Yeah.
I've got Gary Reese dropping the ball over the line. I've got Rob Andrew for making me fall out of love with fly halves.
Yeah.
there wasn't like, they're all just a bit rubbish, you know?
Not enough grubber kicks, eh, Sav?
Not enough grubber kicks, not enough creative. You know, when they kicked it, it just seemed to be either a Gary Owen, which is, I mean, it's almost creative now because of how uncreative it was, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
You just don't really see it. George Ford does it occasionally, I think, actually. He just sends one to the absolute moon and tries to get Freddie Stewart underneath it, which, you know, not the worst tactic in the world if you've got a 6'6" flying fullback, but that didn't exist in this game, so it should not have been happening. No, I mean, I've got Gary Reese for dropping the ball over the line. I don't even know, again, I think I'm saying his name wrong. I don't even know, but yeah, that guy dropping the ball over the line.
Gary Reese, pride of Nottingham, now shame of Nottingham.
Yeah, I could never give a man from Long Eaton Dick of the Day. In fact, I could.
Well, you have to.
Probably not on this podcast. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, oh God, it's difficult to pick a Dick of the Day here because, I mean, a guy called Francis Clough played. Like,
true.
I'm tempted to give it to him. I feel like I'm going to have to give it to Peter Winterbottom just for that one kick and just the fact that it made me just resent him for the rest of the game.
Fair enough.
That's fair. That's fair.
And so the one kind of big negative, big thing I do have written down, Rob Andrew, who you mentioned, falling out of love with the fly half position.
Yes.
At one point, he does the worst time pass I've seen in my life where there's a gap. And he waits until the guy he's passing to is, you know, like sometimes you see like the waiting for the guy's
already being tackled. Yeah.
Yeah. So he waits until the guy, is lined up properly. So it goes from being a ball that would be a break to he times it so badly it's now a hospital pass.
Yes.
And for me, that is such a hideous moment of fly halving that I am going to give Rob Andrew my Dick of the Day.
I concur with that. I remember that moment. And I think even the player was actually a little bit angry after the fact. I can't remember who it was, but they weren't best pleased with the fact they'd just been sold an absolute hit. But yeah.
They should be, yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, Sav, thank you for joining us. That brings us through another episode. Where can people find you? Where can we find all of your stuff? Where can people embrace?
I mean, follow Linebreak Rugby. I think the last article published was a breastfeeding article based around my life with my wife. So feel free to read that. I've also written some other... I was going to make a Hayden Thomas video for Exeter Chiefs scrum half because at the moment, Exeter Chiefs seem to be lacking a perfect international fly half. So maybe follow if you want to see Hayden Thomas highlights over the next couple of days or weeks. I know this is coming out in a while, but it'll probably take me that long to put it together. So feel free to follow Linebreak Rugby on Twitter. Yeah,
I strongly vouch for Linebreak. I think anybody who enjoys this sort of shit rugby content will think Linebreak is excellent. So I mean that as the strongest compliment.
Yes, yes. Philosophies of Sidestep being our best work. Yes. Probably.
Yeah, oh, yeah. I absolutely love the philosophy of Sidestep. Yeah. It was actually a career highlight for me when I suggested that you put in Amy Lee Murphy Crow in the Six Nations.
Yes.
And literally within 24 hours, she was in there with a wonderful quote to back it up.
Got that up, yeah. I want to feature more Ellie Kildan. I think there was an article. We released a couple of videos of Ellie Kildan doing sidesteps, and then she released an interview saying, "I want to be remembered on YouTube as being the hot stepper or something like that, like sidestepping."
Yeah. That's not surprising.
And I was like, yes,
especially considering how little she passes. Like,
yeah. her and Jess Breach are starting to sort that out, but.
Sure.
Yeah, she loves a sidestep and a break.
There was a moment when Robbie, you originally pointed out to me that Ellie Kildan never passes the ball.
Yeah.
And after that point, it really started to bug me. And there was a point after that was first pointed out to me where I went 2 months where every single time I saw Ellie Kildan pass the ball, Jess Breach scored that face.
Yeah.
And that was happened. A genuine stat that time she passes, Jess Breach scores.
The thing is, Ellie Kildan's so good, she keeps getting away with it.
Yeah, oh, she's an incredible
athlete. The amount of times I've seen her take a decision playing for either Quinns or England where you think, oh, she's bombed that try,
yeah,
and then she scores anyway.
If any other player does it, they're not scoring.
Yeah.
But she's remarkably talented. Like,
100%.
Yeah. And an incredible finisher as well. Like, a technical... Like, you think of people at incredible finishers as doing it, squeezing in the corner. But her ability to get the ball down under pressure with people around her is amazing.
Yeah.
Incredible.
It's quality. Well, I'm glad we've ended talking about the Red Roses. That's how we should end.
Yeah. Every episode should end on that. We should have far, far more Red Roses chat. Sav, thank you for joining us.
Yeah.
Cheers.
Well, thank you as well for
joining
us as well. Please, if you are a listener, thank you for listening all the way through. And we will see you next week for the most thrilling fixture, Ireland 32, Tonga 9. Please come and join us next week.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.